So you're telling me a Francoist party swept the Spanish elections last week?
Yeah, he full on does Nazi salutes.
What? Who's this guy? What is his name? Perhaps you say it, you look it up, and you say it after our signature. Shut up, Prez. Hey, it's Mark's Madness. That was a cold open that Prez was not really ready for, but it was interesting news.
I wasn't told this was going to be a cold open.
No, that's how we're doing it now. I'm changing the format now that there's, a new captain.
We killed David.
We killed David again. I'm making terrariums, and I needed food for my centipede.
We fed his body to the worms.
Our permaculture experts needed a jumpstart to their soil making on Pine Ridge. He'll be back, though, with Juju Necromancy. Don't worry. Spain, what the fuck? Why are more people talking about this?
So I was wrong. It wasn't Spain. It was Portugal. Spain's fascist shit.
That's worse, though. Portugal was kind of cool, I thought. Like, they decriminalized drugs and stuff.
Yeah. Turns out there's always a right-wing reaction when cool shit happens.
Oh, shit. That's right. Dun, dun, dun. Oh, history echoing.
Yeah, Portugal had an election a week or two ago, and the results came in, and the leading party, like, the dude, like, does full-on Nazi salutes at rallies and shit.
Do you happen to have another news item you can say while I go grab a second drink, because I didn't realize it was gone?
The news item that happened today was the U.S. proposed a fucking ceasefire at the U.N., and China and Russia vetoed it. And that was because the UN ceasefire proposal was, as China and Russia both called it, a poison pill.
God damn it. I hate having a newborn. Like, I just don't hear about this shit. What the fuck?
The US ceasefire proposal was so bad that it essentially allowed Israel to keep all of its shit.
Oh, no.
Essentially demilitarized the Palestinians.
What if reservations?
That was essentially their plan there. Their plan was like, what if we all put down our guns except for the IDF?
What if you don't disarm, we're going to kill you. And if you do disarm, we're going to kill you. That's what happened at Wounded Knee. And we fuck it.
What if you disarm... And then we put you in a small geographic location.
You mean like the Gaza Strip? No. Smaller. Fuck. Because it's Pine Ridge is bigger than Gaza and the West Bank. So I don't know. Like the concept of how many people.
Well, so they have Gaza and the West Bank right now. So they have it pretty good considering what Israel wants.
Well, and West Bank is basically already like allotment style.
Yeah, it's
land now. You know, it's I mean, like, it is a play by play Indian war shit.
It's being carved out.
I don't know. It's so frustrating. It is so fucking frustrating. There's a way to attack it here. Just saying. And if you're in Australia, in the middle of your fucking country is a place called Pine Gap, okay? Literally just in the middle of the fucking outback, and that's where they control, like, all of the drones from. It's like, I can see why you would do that. That's kind of hard to get to, you know? It's like the NSA database for collecting all of our information being under Hawaii. It's like, that makes sense. Yep. The sharks are attacking the internet cables, though. Maybe what we need to do is we need to get the orcas and the sharks to coordinate with us, right? Poseidon, maybe we start doing acid with the sea animals again.
Start communicate. We learn to psycho communicate with sea animals.
That dolphin could count to eight, okay? I saw somebody say that the other day. I was like, Are we defending Poseidon?
Not defending them, but
look, they were onto something. And I'm just saying, Echo is the key to progressing past this point in the movement. I don't know. Well, what page are we on, by the way?
We are on 192.
And that's slide, right?
Yeah. Page 147, which is not really page 147 because I added like seven different books into this thing.
Yeah. Somebody was like, oh, you can just get this reader here. I was like, no. Did you like read the first like part and be like, oh, that's from this reader, and then assume that was the entire thing? Like,
if you think you could get the reader, you did not open the reader.
we would like to actually turn this into like a real thing, but you know, that's up to you.
Yeah, I don't care. I'm not getting paid for it.
Well, you could be. You could be if you want.
You're gonna have if there's anyone more petty and evil than academic publishers, I would like to fucking see it. So I do not want to get paid for it.
Well, I meant that, you know, because we'd probably just, I don't know how we'd publish it, you know, we have friends, but I was thinking, you know, whatever deal you wanted, but I don't know how, it, you know, there's a bunch, it's fucking, it's weird. Everybody sells a book to the left, it's like, that's a questionable stance, because I just like to give it out, you know, but anyway. We're already reading it, so, and we've already given out in PDF form. So at this point, it's like fundraising for us if we take the money and then costs, of course. But like, anyway, whatever, Prez. This is just not
a conversation. IP lawyers listening.
Any IP lawyers? Okay, so. What words were we on?
Some characteristic points of historical economism. One.
Keep reading.
In research for historical connections, it does not distinguish what is, quote, relatively permanent, end quote, from what is an occasional fluctuation. And by an economic fact, it means the personal self-interest of a small group in a direct and quote unquote dirty Jewish sense. In other words,
okay, we
gotta talk about that, or do you guys know what?
We should talk about it.
Should we?
I don't know if everybody knows, but I feel like you're the Jewish person. You should tell us.
He's talking about scapegoating. Right?
All
right. Yeah, he's talking about how people just like scapegoat he's in the time of Hitler and Ford. So like he's specifically talking about how Jews are being scapegoated for economic issues. And historically that's a thing in Europe, but like just replace dirty Jew for any ethnic group ever in history.
Literally, it's just, you know, find the scapegoat. It doesn't even have to be ethnic groups, you know, people are,
yeah, women,
trans
women, you know, are taking our jobs,
immigrants, which is like, well, that's kind of, I don't know,
immigrants,
that's kind of ethnic, but it doesn't have to be.
Young people, though, fucking the dumbest shit is whenever I see some stupid ass Reddit post and they talk about, oh well, the Netherlands doesn't have a minimum wage. Which they have until like this year, they had a weekly minimum wage. They didn't have an hourly minimum wage until this year. This country, the weekly minimum wage was, I don't remember. It was like barely enough to live on.
I was going to ask, was it good or is
it not good?
We're doing weekly pay because we could cut you off more, but you think you're getting more.
Yeah. Well, so like they also don't have a maximum hourly work week. So because they have a weekly minimum wage, you could have someone working 40 hours and 80 hours making the same wage.
Dude, that's what, what else did we expect from the Dutch?
Yeah. It's also super common here that they have company unions, which is not super common in most developed countries.
Isn't that like super common here in the US?
No. So the company union is literally like you are trying to organize Starbucks, and Starbucks is like, hey, we'll give you a union made by us.
Yeah.
Not union busting. It's very common in like Japan.
I feel like I know quite a few company unions.
It's illegal in the US.
It's illegal.
Yeah. It's actually illegal by international law.
Wait, what?
Yeah. One of the few.
Then why are those countries doing it?
Because international law is meaningless, and anyone who uses international law as the only mechanism to enforce their rights needs to reevaluate their method of organizing.
But isn't like the post office union just a company union?
Not officially. So like these are
official unions. I mean like I'm thinking like when we get down to brass tacks.
Yeah, well, that's like the Gramsci criticism of trade unionism. This is like a literal company union.
Interesting.
This is like you go to HR and the HR is in control of the rep. Union.
That's the boss. That's awesome.
Yeah. that's a company union. That's very common in the Netherlands and Japan and other places, and are violating international.
My dad works for a private transportation company that's unionized and gets public funding, so it's like vague. I don't know.
But that's sad. He probably works for fucking like Arriva or something.
No. It's actually kind of cool. It's a rural transportation system that pretty much only exists here in the UP. But
cool.
It gets people across the UP, and it's like that doesn't fucking ever exist anywhere, you know? Cool. Yeah, it's actually really sweet. Fucking Marquette County is like one of the biggest counties in America. And so the fact that they have a system that goes to the main parts where like poor people live, you know, it's like, oh, that's cool of them to make that possible for people to actually fucking work in rural America.
You know, it'd be cooler.
Trains.
If they nationalized it.
Oh, yeah, that'd be better. My dad wants me to come move there and join his like workforce and become a union like leader. I'm like,
you should join it and then nationalize it.
Yeah, literally, he wants me to stop it. We have this one guy. We had this guy in TRN who fucking took over his union and then started a workers' council and dissolved his position.
Like, cool.
Yeah, it's super fucking awesome.
Hell yeah.
And so that's still like going on, but it's like, oh, it's such an uphill battle once you fucking do that.
Anyone listening that is a union organizer, do that shit.
Yeah, killer.
My rant about the Dutch had a point. They have in addition to the weekly minimum wage that they fixed, and now you have an hourly minimum wage, you can pay children less.
God, what the fuck?
So I literally go to the grocery store, and you know how like in the US it's like older people who should have been retired and shit?
Not here.
In the Netherlands, it is fucking like 14-year-olds stocking shelves and bagging my groceries and shit, because they get paid literally like half the wage.
I mean, you can't do that here, but they do. Fuck it. We have a lot of children. Somebody came to South Dakota, you know, to come to Sundance and like, you know, meet the network. And I think it was like Sonic or something we went to, but he was like, was that a 13-year-old at the window? Like, yeah, probably. It's America, man.
This is the Netherlands.
I feel like the Midwest and the Netherlands are more honestly similar than I realize.
Having lived here, the Netherlands is just a fucking like outpost of the U.S.
It's horrible. When you think about it, the Mayflower came from there.
Yeah, yeah. Common Dutch L.
Common Dutch L. Let's continue.
Anyway, I'll just repeat that whole thing.
That was fucking one sentence in because of the God damn.
I'll just repeat that because we went a long ass tangent. Some characteristic points of historical economism. One, in research for historical connections, does not distinguish what is, quote, relatively permanent, end quote, from what is an occasional fluctuation. And by an economic fact, it means that personal self-interest of a small group in a direct and, quote, unquote, dirty Jewish sense. In other words, it does not take account for the formations of economic classes with all their inherent relationships, but assumes a mean and usurious self-interest, especially when this takes on criminal forms. Two, the doctrine by which economic development is reduced to a succession of technical changes in the instruments of labor. The discovery of new combustibles and of new motive energies, as of new raw materials to be transformed, has a certain great importance since it can alter the position of individual states, but it does not determine the historical movement, etc.
But oil became a pretty big thing.
Guns, germs, and steel, man.
Well, I'm just saying, though, oil did become a pretty determining factor in not just individual states.
Yeah,
like,
but
I couldn't have predicted that, but like that did happen.
Well, Gramsci was around when oil was already a big thing.
No, yeah, but oil didn't, you know, start wars.
What?
Like, we start war over oils now forever, you know, like all the
time. Well, Gramsci's point is that by saying we start a war exclusively over oil is economistic and oversimplification.
Sure, I guess that's true.
It is. So, like, you would say, like, the with an economistic argument, you would think that, like,
that's true.
Iraq would be an international empire by now when it was the British and then the U.S.
That's a good point. Damn. Gramsci owning me from the grave.
Oh.
You just gasp at me. Like fucking idiots. Did you hear yourself?
Take a second to think about it.
That's called economism, you fuck.
It often happens that people attack historical economism believing that they are attacking historical materialism. This is the case, for example, in an article in Avenir of Paris for October 10th, 1930, reported in the Weekly Review of the Foreign Press for October 21st, 1930, which I quote as typical. We have been told for a long time, but especially since the war, that questions of self-interest dominate the peoples and lead the world forward. It is the Marxists who have invented this thesis under the slightly doctrinaire name of historical materialism. In pure Marxism, men taken en masse do not obey passions but economic necessity. Politics is passion. Patriotism is passion. These two necessary ideas only enjoy an apparent function in history because in reality, the life of the peoples throughout the centuries explained by a changing and ever-renewed interplay of the causes of an economic kind. Economics is everything. Many philosophers and bourgeois economists have taken up this refrain. They assume a certain air of explaining international politics to us by competition for grain, petrol, or rubber.
Oh, fuck.
They exert themselves to explain to us that all diplomacy is governed by questions of customs duties.
God damn it.
just getting fucking railed on right now. No, <you're> like, customs duties and cost prices. These explanations are very much in the ascendant. They have a slightly scientific appearance and proceed from any kind from a kind of superior skepticism, which would like to pass for supreme smartness, passion in foreign policy, sentiment in home affairs. Away with it. That stuff is all right for simpletons. The great minds, the initiated, know that everything is governed by supply and demand. Now, this is absolute pseudo-truth. It is utterly false that the peoples only let themselves be led by considerations of self-interest, and it is entirely true that they obey, above all, considerations dictated by a desire for and an ardent faith in prestige. Anyone who does not understand this understands nothing. End quote. The rest of the article, entitled The Mania for Prestige, gives the example of German and Italian policy, which it says is dictated by prestige and not by material interests. The like most modern thing is the John Mearsheimer guy, who everyone really likes to reference.
I don't know who that is.
You've never heard it? You must have. Anyway, John Mearsheimer is the guy that he was on Electronic Intifada recently. He is that often referenced video where he says that America caused the Russia and Ukraine war. His main thing is the international relations theory of realism.
I'm growing grass in my house. That's how much I like to touch grass, okay?
The whole theory of realism is like great power theory. There, people are just competing over resources. That is this.
Oh, okay. So
the stupid criticism thing that they just leveled. Economism.
Yeah, yeah. We all got criticisms we can take, and maybe.
This article contains, in brief, a large dose of the more banal polemical points against Marxism, but in reality, the polemical is against clumsy economism of the Loria type. On the other hand, the writer is not very strong in argument, even in other respects. He does not understand that passion could simply be a synonym for economic interest, and that it is difficult to maintain that political activity is a permanent state of passionate exasperation and agony. French politics is actually represented as systematic and coherent rationality, purged of all passionate elements, etc. In its most widespread form of economist superstition, Marxism loses a great part of its cultural expansiveness in the higher sphere of the intellectual group. In return for what it gains among the popular masses and the mediocre intellectuals, who like to appear very cunning, but who do not intend to overtax their brains, etc. Oof. As Engels wrote,
that's me. God damn it, I'm getting fucking roasted. I am getting roasted right now.
This is a unofficial self-crit session.
This sucks. This sucks right now, friends. I said the most stupid thing I could have because
set yourself up perfectly for exactly.
Like, I pride myself in not falling into economism too often, but
fuck. Like, literally right before he was going to dig into people who said say that exact stuff, you say that exact thing. Got to get that clown hat from, like, the Cultural Revolution. And
for real, though. I mean, because it's such a good point, though, because, like, a lot of the times when I think about, like, oh, why did they invade the Black Hills? Oh, it was for the gold and stuff. But it's more than that. Oh, my God. Fucking idiot. We should... Ah, oh, fuck!
Learn from Shigmanitu's mistakes,
everyone. Everybody read Gramsci. Remember, I'm not smart. I try to tell people that all the time.
You are, as Gramsci would say, a mediocre intellectual.
I wouldn't even call myself intellectual. I read the fucking books and I talk about them because I don't like how the intellectuals talk about it, you know?
That's like, the whole point of this podcast.
I'm like a lumping intellectual. I don't know. Like,
oh, where was I? As Engels wrote, it is very convenient for many people to believe that they have in their pockets, cheap and with no effort, the whole of history, all political and philosophical wisdom. All political and philosophical wisdom concentrated in a few formulas. Forgetting that the thesis that men became conscious of the basic conflicts in the field of ideology is not of a psychological or moralistic, but of an organic epistemological character. They create a forma mentis. I have no idea. Now he's speaking in fucking Latin. Forma mentis.
It's a fucking way of thinking, Prez. Jesus. Duh. No.
Uncountable. Jesus what? Christ.
Is it?
A mindset or set of attitudes. We should ban Latin.
I hate this. Fuck Latin.
They create a way of thinking for considering politics and hence history as a continuous march to dupes. I'm assuming that means march of idiots. A game of illusion and conjuring. Critical activity is reduced to exposing tricks, discovering scandals, prying into the pockets of representative men. That sounds very familiar. Fool's
market. That's what it means.
That was close enough.
Well, that's interesting. That I was thinking March. I mean, it makes sense, but a market is kind of like you feel like you have your choice of ideas and you're all idiots. But the critical activity is reduced to exposing tricks. Like, this is like, you know, talking about electoralism and stuff. Like, this is fucking so succinct. What a chef's kiss, real Italian moment.
You know? It reminds me of like a lot of the people who get stuck on the basic like historical realizations we all go through when we first become Marxists of like how evil America is. Like, oh, the CIA was really doing this and this and this, and the US was really doing these things in the background that was manipulating history. But then you don't move past that level of analysis, and that becomes your only frame of analysis.
Well, and then they forget that colonialism existed. And,
yeah. It was always the U.S. in the background.
Yeah, it's
no.
It's fascinating. It's so fascinating. Gramsci is so ahead of his time, you know.
He predicted so much.
Like, why aren't more people reading Gramsci? You know, you've been telling me for years to read Gramsci.
Anti-Italian discrimination, I'm telling you.
It's true. That probably is part of why I didn't read Gramsci sooner.
Well, I get the partial answer is that the Italian Communist Party invented Eurocommunism, so no one takes them seriously anymore. So they really fucked them over, but you know. Anyway. Thus, it is forgotten that since economism is, or is presumed to be, also an objective canon of interpretation, objective scientific,
and fucking Hegelian bullshit. Fuck off.
Fuck Hegel.
Why?
Gramsci has to remind you that he can just like pull random shit out of his head while in prison with no references to just remind you how much of a higher level he is.
I am fucking I can see through time, you know.
The search for immediate self-interest must be valid for all aspects of history, for the men who represent the thesis as well as for those who represent the antithesis. In addition, another proposition of Marxism is also forgotten. The proposition that popular beliefs, or beliefs of the same kind as popular beliefs, have, I guess I should restate this, because there's some important quotations that we usually don't read the quotations sometimes, but this part's important. In addition, another proposition of Marxism is also forgotten. The proposition that quote-unquote popular beliefs, or beliefs of the same kind as popular beliefs, not in quotations, have the validity of material forces. So the quote-unquote popular beliefs is being equated with the non-quoted popular beliefs because we equate them as hegemonic. So when we think of just like, when we say something is popular, we just take that as everyone believes it. When really that should be quoted as this is supposedly popular.
Well, and even then, if it's popular, does not make it correct history. The Clovis First hypothesis is constantly promoted, and
yeah,
we're constantly disproving that Clovis people even existed. You know, like children still get caught. I mean, it's finally changing, but like children up until like 2019 were being taught a fabricated story.
So this level of linguistic trickery becomes very important in later essays that we're going to read, where popular and popular have a very different meaning. So this kind of distinction becomes important. The errors of interpretation in this research for dirty Jewish, quote unquote, dirty Jewish self-interests have sometimes been crude and comical, and so have reacted negatively on the prestige of the original doctrine. It is therefore necessary to fight against economism not only in the theory of historiography, but also and especially in the theory and practice of politics. In this field, the struggle can and must be conducted by developing the theory of the political party and by the practical development of the life of certain political parties, parentheses, the struggle against the theory of the so-called permanent revolution, to which is opposed the concept of revolutionary democratic dictatorship, the importance received by the support given to constituent ideologies, end parentheses. One could research into the judgments that emerged as to how certain political movements developed, taking as typical the Boulangist movements from 1886 to about 1890, or the Dreyfus Affair, or even the coup d'etat of December 2nd. An analysis of Marx's classic book, The 18th Brumaire of Napoleon Bonaparte, to study what relative importance is given to the immediate economic factor, and what space is occupied by the concrete study of ideologies. Faced with these events, economism asks the question, who enjoyed the immediate initiative in the matter? And answers it with arguments as naive as they are paralogistic. It was enjoyed immediately by a certain fraction of the ruling group, and in order not to make a mistake, this choice falls on that fraction, which evidently has a progressive function and one of control over all the economic forces. One can be sure of not being wrong because necessarily, if the movement of examination comes to power, sooner or later the progressive fiction of the ruling group will end up by controlling the new government and by making its instrument for wielding the state apparatus to its own benefit. This, therefore, is a cheap infallibility, which not only has no theoretical significance, but has very little political importance and practical efficacy.
Well, it's funny, as people are constantly saying, you know, the U.S. existing or whatever is a progressive force, and it's like, fucking Gramsci said it doesn't have to be fucking 40 years ago, not 40 years ago, fucking way longer than that.
Almost 100.
almost 100 years ago. 40. What the fuck am I saying? I don't know. I was thinking like the 1940s and then trying to do math because he obviously, you know, World War II was in the 1940s. So this is before that. So.
Well, so Marx, Gramsci was locked up in 1926. So we're almost at the 100th anniversary of Gramsci getting locked up.
That's exactly why we're doing this series.
Yeah.
We're going to end it on New Year's Eve.
So the issue is that this all goes back to Marx writing that capitalism is a progressive force and feudalism is a progressive force compared to slavery. And these are all, you know, Marx wrote abstract to concrete. And when he made this argument, he was talking about the very abstract capitalism is
better than feudalism. He also specifies all of capital as an analysis of capitalist development in Western Europe.
Yeah.
Over-applying it from there is a fucking problem. Because obviously Italy's not the fucking same.
So considering that he was talking about Western Europe, and also even just considering the fact he's just talking about systems themselves. He's just talking about capitalism compared to feudalism. He's just saying capitalism is better than feudalism. And even within that, he's still saying capitalism is fucking horrible. And he also talks pretty extensively, at least several times, about how fucking horrible capitalist colonialism is to India and to its colonies. He's very open about how horrible capitalism is to the subjugated nations. That
chapter 36 or something that's like dedicated to colonialism.
That like he's very clear that capitalism is good for the countries that are capitalist and not good to the ones that it's oppressing.
It is progressive for a certain group of people. As he says in the manifesto, it has always been freedom for the slave masters, not the fucking workers, Jesus Christ, or the slaves.
Like the progressive force argument is very, very, it's a very narrow statement. It is literally like, it is better to be a worker than it is to be a feudal peasant.
Well,
that's not as broad as he's saying.
No, but Engels straight up says in the Principles of Communism, which, mind you, was a draft that was never supposed to be published. So he said it was better to be a proletarian than a slave. And I was like, that is only something a white factory owner could write. Because he is never going to be a slave, you know?
Well, I mean, it is better because being a slave is fucking horrible.
No, being the slave was better than being the proletariat.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I misheard you.
Yeah. Or I mean, I probably misspoke, but yeah, no. Frederick Engels thinks I'd rather be paid a wage and, you know.
Yeah, like organizers in the 1800s and early 1900s loved saying shit like that. And it's just so fucking like slavery existed.
What a white man's burden.
Yeah, like slavery existed then. You can just go and check it out and then not say that shit. But well, anyway. That's
like the thing that pisses me off most about Engels and Marx's analysis of like American Indians and stuff like that is it's like you can't, these guys never went to America. They could have.
They chose not to. They never.
You know, like what?
Like fucking de Tocqueville went and he was fucking horrible.
Yeah, I mean, you have no excuse to be fucking armchairing that hard, you know?
But
especially anyway. With like Origins of Family, Engels writing that shit right after Marx dies, it's like, bruh, at least go to America. Shut up. You're rich. Shut up. You ain't even got to be that rich.
This was a very narrow theoretical argument for a very narrow perspective, and people have expanded it to be not from that context. So like, it's not about one group or one nation being a progressive force in a specific period of time like Biden is a historically progressive force or whatever, compared to Trump. Like these are long periods of time. There you can make,
if somebody's saying that though, it's like, I don't know.
Yes.
The kids in cages are still happening. They built the wall. What are you talking about? Palestine is being bombed. I get he was dropping huge ass bombs in Afghanistan, but like, brother, at least, you know, fucking tried to make peace in Korea.
Trump is actually the historically progressive force.
He kind of is, though.
No, neither of them are.
I mean, he fucking, when you look at it, at least for an indigenous person, like he instituted a like task force to address MMIW. You know, like Deb Holland sold off land. You know, at least Trump like only tried to do one termination case, and then he's like, ah, fuck, I got fucked, fuck. Then the COVID body bags thing, but you know,
that's the thing.
Obama though, did that too. So
Gramsci just said people talk about different fractions of a class. You need to be analyzing this on the level of classes or on the level.
Well,
of
yeah, history. Yeah, I am. That's why I'm saying like.
No, I'm not talking about you. I'm trying to get us out of the tangent.
Oh, sure. Try to move on.
So, like, people can talk about Napoleon because he represented the bourgeois revolution. Or people talk about certain people because they represent, people talk about Mao because he represented a proletarian revolution. But if you talk about, like, a period of 20 years, that's representing a class fraction, which, as Gramsci just said, you can't really do because that's not anything. That's just one class fraction competing against the other. That has nothing to do with progressiveness or regressiveness or anything like that. In general, it does not produce anything except moralistic sermons and interminable personal problems. When a movement of the Belangist type is produced, the analysis should be realistically conducted along these lines. 1. The social content of the masses who adhere to the movement. 2. What function these masses have in the balance of forces, which is being transformed, as is shown by the very birth of the new movement. 3. What political and social significance have the aims which the leaders present and which find consent? To what effective needs do they correspond? 4. Examination of the means for the proposed end. 5. Only in the last analysis and in a political and not a moralistic form does one put forward the hypothesis that this movement will necessarily be changed in nature and serve very different ends from those which the following multitudes expect. But with the economists, this hypothesis is asserted in anticipation. When no concrete element, parentheses, one which, in other words, appears as such on the evidence of common sense and not from some esoterically, quote-unquote, scientific analysis, end parentheses, yet exists to support it, so that it appears as a moralistic accusation of duplicity and bad faith or of lack of shrewdness or of stupidity on the part of the followers. The political struggle thus begins a series of personal encounters between those who are not taken in and who have the devil in the bottle, those who are made fools of by their own leaders and are unwilling to be convinced because of their incurable foolishness. On the other hand, until these movements have achieved power, it can be thought that they may fail, and some indeed have failed. Belangism itself, which failed as such and was later definitively crushed by the Dreyfusard movement, the movement of George Valois, that of General Gaeta. Research must therefore be directed to the identification of the elements of power, but also of the elements of weakness, which they contain within them, the economist hypothesis asserts that an immediate element of power, i.e. the availability of certain direct or indirect financial support, parentheses, a large newspaper which backs up the movement with all, is also a financial support, end parentheses, and that is all. It is too little. In this case, also the analysis of the different levels of relations of forces can only cumulate in the sphere of hegemony and of ethico-political relationships.
Yeah, I try to stress that all the time, that it is not enough to be able to fucking raise money. You gotta actually fucking do shit that changes the world. You can't fucking just start hoarding wealth.
Do you want to take over?
I gladly. So an element to be added as exemplifying theories of so-called intransigence is that of rigid aversion on principle to so-called compromises, which has a subordinate manifestation, what can be called the quote fear of dangers, end quote. It is clear that the aversion on principle to compromises is closely tied to economism, in that the conception on which this aversion is based cannot be other than the iron conviction that there exists objective laws for historical development of the same character as natural laws, with, in addition, the belief in fatalistic finalism of a similar character to religious belief, since the favorable conditions are predestined to come into existence, and from these will be determined, in a somewhat mysterious way, regenerative events. So what he's basically saying is, like, the people are like, communism's gonna win, you know, is coming from an economist place that has a deterministic view of history,
essentially. Yeah, because they're going like, capitalism was historically progressive, and then the next step is going to be socialism and then communism.
Well, and then I guess this is where fascism comes in. It's like, people, you know, you can get out organized.
Yeah, because then you have the whole analysis of, well, fascism is just capitalism and decay.
Sorry, my baby's getting nose boogies sucked out, so she's, if people think I'm neglecting her, I'm not. The result is not only useless, but the loss of all voluntary initiative aiming to predispose the situation according to a plan, side by side with these fatalistic convictions, is nevertheless the tendency to trust, quote, for the future, end quote, blindly and uncritically in the regulating virtue of arms, though this is not completely without logic and coherence, since the intervention of the will is thought to be useful for destruction, not for construction. Quote, well, parentheses, already in action at the very moment of destruction, end quote. Destruction is conceived mechanically, not as destruction construction. In such ways of thinking, no account is taken of the, quote, time factor, and no account is taken in the last analysis of the, quote, economy itself, in the sense that there is no understanding of how mass ideological facts always lag behind mass economic phenomena, and how, therefore, at certain moments, the automatic drive due to the economic factor is slowed down, cramped, or even broken up momentarily by traditional ideological elements. There must therefore be a consciously planned struggle to win, quote, understanding, end quote, of the requirements of the economic position of the masses, which may be opposed to the directives of the traditional leaders. In appropriate political initiative, is always necessary to free the economic drive from the tethers of traditional policies, to change, that is, the political direction of certain forces, which must be absorbed in order to realize a new homogeneous economical, political, historical bloc without internal contradictions. And since two similar forces can only be fused in the new organism through a series of compromises or by force of arms coming together on a plan of alliance or by subordinating one to the other with coercion. The question is whether one has this force and whether it is, quote, productive to employ it. If the union of two forces is necessary in order to conquer a third, the recourse to arms and coercion, parentheses, given that these are available, is a purely methodological hypothesis, and the only concrete possibility is compromise, since force can be employed against enemies, not against a part of oneself, which one wants to assimilate rapidly, for which, quote, goodwill and enthusiasm are necessary. And the way I kind of look at this paragraph is through the lens of what happened during Wounded Knee is you had this right-wing paramilitary force propped up by the U.S. government under Dick Wilson kind of instigate a lot of hate crimes against it gets kind of confusing here because Gramsci's talking about the traditional state apparatus, right, which currently indigenous people's traditional leadership isn't the state apparatus. They're undermined by a BIA. You know, it gets really fucking complicated because when we say traditional, what we mean is people who are not compradors, right? Which is just not using Marxist language, basically, because it's fucking not our language. Anyway, so trying to update this analysis for today, yeah, no, the radical leadership, you know, the elements opposing capital in the Wounded Knee affair ended up realizing we can't kill each other. Like, you can't have a war, you know, like, then you're just doing the U.S.'s job for them. Like, that's the whole colonial shtick, you know, divide and conquer. So if you want to overthrow, you know, U.S. rule in the land, you got to work together and stuff, which, you know, you can't force that, you know, like basically the goons were trying to force assimilation on behalf of the U.S. to a BIA, you know, save the Indian, well, kill the Indian, save the man sort of policy that didn't end until AIM started doing these things. So it's I don't know. Fascinating to read. Because you kind of have what Rodney calls the robbing of historical agency from colonized peoples, which is, you know, the ultimate crime of the colonists and one they even seek to erase the memory of history, you know, through propaganda and such. I don't know. Fascinating. What are your thoughts, Prez?
I think it would be worthwhile to see how the dichotomy between his concept of the party and also civil and political society can be applied.
Yeah,
his whole concept of the state is very broad.
Right, yeah. I should be. Well, but even then, like when we're talking about like indigenous, so you're talking about a third sovereignty within the
U.S. Well, so his concept of the state is not the nation state.
No, I know. So that's why I'm trying to like explain to people what I mean by like the tribal council undermining traditional leadership in Oglala country, at least, you know, like that's, it's not like a fascist position to back the traditional leadership because that's not what Gramsci means by traditional leadership. He means the BIA fuckers.
Yeah. Well, so I'm just trying to that would definitely be like a resistance movement, but I'm just trying to think of
right. It's hard to word.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where that would fit, or if that is would need a new adaptation.
Well, right, and so that's like, you know, I'm looking at our condition because you obviously can't pluck them and put them into our, you know. So it just fascinates me how the way we have to think about this and progress. So maybe we just move forward and, you know, email us and talk about it. You know, got a lot of people in the Chunkaluta Network Discord server writing stuff up. Maybe we just wrap up the episode right here, actually, because didn't I just end this paragraph?
Yeah, it's about an hour, I think.
Yeah, that's a great place to end, too, foresight and perspective. So, yeah, we're going to end on 197. You know, we're going to hit up North Korea. They're going to bring David back for us. And then we're going to, you know, I'll probably won't be here for the next one, honestly. I think we're launching you
to the worms.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're launching Ojibwe Warrior. So, you know, there's going to be two seasons airing simultaneously so we can read more books to you and introduce you to other cool perspectives that aren't, you know, two white people talking all the time. And I'm just annoying, so I want other people to talk besides me. I say stupid stuff all the time, and I just
you say shit right before you're about to get owned by a guy from 100 years ago.
Holy shit, did I get roasted today? Like, God. But I think, you know, The Modern Prince at least needs to be on everybody's reading list because this is fire shit. But with the full context of everything we've read before, what a presentation, Prez. You did good. I loved this journey we've been taking on so far. And it's worth, you know, joining the Patreon and supporting the work we do at the Chunkaluta Network. And, you know, like I said, we'd like to publish this. And, you know, it would be totally reasonable to give this out to Patreons of a certain tier or higher. We're also considering giving terrariums to like Angles tier donors. So if you donate $50 or more, you know, you get a custom made mason jar sized terrarium that I'll make you and grow the plants. I bought some of them. You know,
if you donate several hundred dollars, you will be shipped an aquarium sized terrarium.
I literally could do that. The shipping. If you want custom made, like, I'm not even fucking joking. We're trying to raise money as many different ways as we can because begging is obviously only so effective. And so, you know, like, hit me up. I can make you an aquarium. You want an aquarium? I'll make you an aquarium. other than that, you know, you can email the show at marksbandness@gmail.com, or you can email chunkalutanetwork@gmail.com or proton.me or whatever the fuck. I don't know. Or, you know, on Twitter or X, at Mark
Twitter.
At Mark's Madness Pod or at Chunkaluta.org. Okay. Or you can come yell at me personally for being so fucking wrong. Oh my God, embarrassing. I deserve to be roasted forever for that one. Wow. You know?
Should kick you off the show.
Honestly, I feel like it. I'm like, dude, I just. Just step down. It's the only honorable thing I could do after that roasting. I just took it for like fucking 5-10 minutes. Oh, shit, dude. Everybody should have seen my face. Jesus Christ. As soon as he said petrol, I was just like, fuck me. Fuck me. Fuck me. other than that, you know, there's the Chunkaluta Network podcast that y'all should check out. We just did an interview with Malcolm Harris, who, of course, is being accused of xenophobia for being critical of some of China's terrible foreign policy, which is like...
What? China has bad foreign policy?
Who's ever heard that criticism?
What?
Like, let's just be honest. Like, that's not xenophobic to admit. Like, Jesus. There's not debt traps. You know, that's dumb and xenophobic, but like there's criticisms that should be had, you know, and it's just a lot of them have to deal with indigenous populations too. And it's like, oh, it's almost like there's a colonial hegemony not being addressed and hasn't been addressed by communism effectively. Like, anyone going to talk about that? You know, I don't know. It's so frustrating. But yeah, you know, come yell at us. I feel like a lot of people will this time. The Marx Madness server is free to join. Just, you know, come to the Twitter. You know, we'll probably ban you if you aren't like able to form an actual argument, but you know, and you just want to yell, but like, you know, we welcome the criticism. We're often called too pro China. So can't please everyone, you know? I feel like I'm a very reasonable position on China. It's not my country. You know, I'm going to have a revolution here and then do better. You know, that's my solution. You know, I don't know. Other than that, you know, I think, oh shit, you know, we're raising money for a house for an elder right now. So, there's going to be, GoFundMe in the description, the show notes, to help with that. We're like 400 away or something. I would have to look at the total, but yeah, it's like 400, and then we have to get an estimate from somebody who's not trying to rip us off for being native near Rapid City that will haul it to the res. You just get charged more, especially if your name Shungmani too. Anyway, so, you know, lots of hurdles. And then we'll be having a summer fundraiser for construction stuff to build the distribution center. We want to enable ourselves to do a lot of the things ourselves instead of paying somebody. So that way it's a one-time cost versus paying over and over and over again. I'd rather pay for labor then pay for equipment over and over. Renting is so ridiculous. Other than that, we're, you know, if you know of any good grants that don't suck from Indian Collective, maybe, you know, I've thought about it, but also I don't think they'll give me a grant. They don't like my family anyway. So we criticize them too much. you know, we're looking for good grants to hopefully get some like construction equipment with in order to like build people's homes and shit. Like we're trying to get like a skid steer, Bobcat. I don't know if people like a front loader. Do these words make sense to people? I'm sure some people know what I'm talking about, but, and then we're looking for tradespeople to come out to South Dakota. You know, ideally the grant, will allow us to pay your labor. If not, there is a program that as long as we have people signed up for, we'll get the wiring and the plumbing and stuff. We just need a carpenter, a plumber, an electrician. We have some, but we have to pay them up front for the labor. So we're kind of hoping some communists that are certified in South Dakota or could get certified in South Dakota if, you know, the org fundraised for it, might want to come help out, do some really cool shit. We got a lot going on this summer. We just sent out 2 20-foot trucks to Pine Ridge, didn't even fundraise for it. You know, no, don't mean to brag. So, you know, things are changing, but slowly. So we're still crowdfunding for stuff, but at the same time, it's just mostly on the side while we try to secure funding in more secure ways. Crowdfunding is not a secure way to go about things. That's why we encourage you guys to become monthly supporters. You know, it really goes a long way. Especially this month. I mean, I think we've had a really great month this year as far as content production. And I know what I've been recording behind the scenes, blah, 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 blah. You know, there's a billion plugs I could go on and on about, but you know, the Patreon's a huge deal. And I know it's not normal that Marx Madness did this, but the reason why we're doing it is because the work is actually worth it, because the podcasts don't actually fucking matter to us besides the fact that it's good education and a quick way to update people, quicker way to update people. You know, obviously Marx Madness is released more regularly than Chocoluta. That's why Chocoluta only is going to have 12 episodes guaranteed this year. But literally, I can guarantee that it's going to be released every month on the 20th. Like, that's better than I've ever done. You know, everybody knows that, like, as soon as summer hits, I get super fucking busy. But this time, summer's covered, you know, and that's really cool. And it's really, I don't know, I'm proud to see what we've built up in a year internationally. Like, people don't actually understand the full scope of things because we can't effectively create the media to agitprop around it. Also, probably bad opsec to brag about everything. So, you know, we only try to do stuff that's safe to talk about publicly, that already has a lot of public attention and stuff like that, because you can't move 20-foot trailers, you know, effectively with food forests in them and whole crews of people to jumpstart the gardens in Pine Ridge and not, you know, like, we didn't have to talk about that till it was done. That's a 3 months ago, we raised money to take a 20-foot U-Haul out to Pine Ridge full of wood and stuff. We fundraised for that. We doubled it up, didn't it? And think about that. You know, you gotta understand the bigger picture. And because we're fucking showing receipts. That's for sure. Holy fuck. And, like, nobody donated to that. You know, like, you know. It's fucking awesome. But yeah, you know, lots going on. So I just really think people should get on board because we're fucking doing something. And it's definitely a lot more than just accumulate wealth, you know? But yeah. Thank y'all for listening. Did you want to say anything, Prez?
No.
All right. Well, this was Mark's Madness. Goodbye.
Bye.